Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's your radio friend with lots and lots of good health information and advice. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
Today we face confusion and misinformation in many parts of our lives. Confusion is something that we have all learned how to work around, but sometimes never work through. Asking questions has become not only important, but imperative to heading yourself in the right direction. And when you're on the path to better health, having all the information that you possibly could use to make better decisions will help you achieve the benefits that you're trying to achieve. When we finally make that decision to get healthy, we want to make sure we have quality products, a great diet, a wonderful exercise program, and all the things in order that are essential for quality of life, including a quality probiotic. With me today is Natasha Trenev. She's a world-renowned expert in the field of probiotics and the founder of the American Probiotic Industry. As a developmental scientist whose family has been commercially producing yogurt and other cultured foods for generations, Natasha has spent more than over 40 years now studying the health benefits connected to the consumption of beneficial bacteria. Help me welcome my guest today, Natasha Trenev. Hello, Natasha.
Good day to you, Jeffrey, and I have to say that this is probably the most important thing the consumer needs to know, because they're putting out good money to improve their health, and if they don't know what they're buying, they're not going to improve their health. And as I have often said, probiotics are the foundation of everyone's health. So let's, you know, get everybody informed so that they can make wise decisions.
As a consumer today, why do we need to read labels?
Oh, it's so important, Jeffrey, because everyone assumes that the government or some agency is reviewing the products for their contents to make sure they match the ingredient statement on the label, and nothing is further from the truth. And I can tell you from spending well over 45 years in the probiotic industry, before it was even called the probiotic industry, it's so important for the consumer to know what live bacteria they're ingesting, at what number, and if that bacteria will survive warehouse, transportation, shelf life, and gastric juices to make it to the small intestine. I can't tell people how important this is, because they have to realize it for themselves, that we are talking about the most important concept for human health in the 21st century, and that is improving the ecosystem inside our 27 feet of GI tract, which houses over 100 trillion microbes. So you need to be armed with this information, because the choice you make will definitely impact your health.
You know, I think the philosophy sometimes is, you know, people that say, well, I eat a good diet part of the time, and then the other time I don't really eat as well, but, you know, maybe a good diet once in a while is beneficial. So if you relate that to probiotics, isn't just some kind of a probiotic better than no probiotic at all?
Well, no, because we don't have that luxury anymore. Maybe 60, 70 years ago, mm-hmm. when we didn't have all of the pollution in our food supply that we do today, that may have been the truth. But the truth is that since 1980, I have been watching the food poisoning episodes listings reported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they usually hover around 80 to 40 million people a year that get serious food poisoning. So that's changed. And the fact is that we have many more bacteria in our food chain that are resistant to all known antibiotics. It's not just a South American problem, it is an American problem. And, you know, the number of people who are taking over-the-counter drugs to control their acid or to alleviate their constipation has grown exponentially. So we have a real problem in our culture. So we can no longer depend on just foods that are laden with sugar and promise us some beneficial bacteria to fix that ecosystem in our gut, which seems to be disturbed in almost every individual across the country. So if we are paying out good money, we need to know exactly what beneficial bacteria or probiotic bacteria are in that product and what are available to us when we consume that product. It's as simple as that. And I want to reiterate here the definition of a dietary supplement. And just to remind everybody that a dietary supplement is a product intended for ingestion that contains a dietary ingredient intended, now listen everybody, to add further nutritional value to supplement the diet. So if you are adding beneficial bacteria to further supplement your diet, it has to be in some kind of a measure. If you're just eating a probiotic food, it means you're eating a functional food, but you are not adequately supplementing the microbiota in your gut to make sure that that ecosystem is in a positive balance. I hope that was a good definition.
No, very much so. And I think one of the things that I think we have a hard time, thinking about is, these are products that are measured in millions and billions. And when you start talking about numbers that are so extensively large, someone may see the number and think that this happens to be a great quality product because of the number and the zeros. I remember the first time I saw a probiotic that had that many zeros in it. I mean, decades ago, I was taken back. I never thought they had anything that had that many zeros and numbers of anything. So they may be kind of convinced more because of the zeros behind the product rather than what's in it.
Well, again, Jeffrey, since I sat on the standards committees with the National Nutritional Foods Association since 1987 and have been an active member of the health food organization since 1970, I'm very well acquainted with the necessity of having some kind of a labeling standard, especially because people are confused about those billions or millions. And I think, frankly, people tune out when they hear those large numbers because they can't seem to understand. So here is some, simple guidelines, which is easy for anybody to follow, mm-hmm. that, each probiotic dietary supplement should contain a very simple label that states each and every organism. In other words, it has to list the genus, the species, and the strain. And then it has to tell you how many billions of those microorganisms are available to you through a printed expiry date. It's as simple as that. In other words, the manufacturer is tasked by telling you what organism is in the product, at what number, and through what date. Now, here's how some of the tricks are played. Manufacturers will list the total count of bacteria. They'll list like 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 bacteria on the label and give you a total count. Well, giving you a total count is like giving you a multiple vitamin without telling you how much vitamin C, how much vitamin E, how much vitamin A you have in it. Just say it's a multiple vitamin. So you as a consumer don't know actually what that multiple vitamin contains. It's the same thing with probiotics. It is the job of the manufacturer to tell you why they've put so many microorganisms in there, how much of each of those microorganisms are in the product, and if they survive shelf life. And it's very tricky because there's all kinds of marketing techniques. They tell you, oh, it's okay if you refrigerate it occasionally. Oh, yes, and the product is shelf stable, but don't expose it to heat or moisture. These are what I call insincere, marketing efforts by the so-called manufacturer of the probiotic product. And you as the consumer, if you're taking the most important supplement to improve your health, you should know why what you're getting and what that product will do for you ultimately.
Now, these labeling standards that you speak of and the actual standards, this is obviously not just a new idea.
No, it's not a new idea. The natural foods industry, just like we had the issue with organic labeling in the 1980s before organic labeling even came to the forefront, the industry realized that the FDA was going to over-regulate us unless we promised as an industry to self-regulate and make certain that people were meeting the dietary ingredient facts on their label of what they contained inside the bottle. So we started committees in 1987, And since probiotics was virtually unknown in the health food industry as a category in the late 1980s, I was asked by the manufacturers division of the NNFA to start, you know, rolling the ball with setting a standard for probiotics, because they felt since most people are not selling them and they don't understand them, you know, we can at least get one standard on the book and get the ball rolling. Well, needless to say that the minute, you know, I started with this process, I thought it was going to be easy. While people came out of the woodwork and were attacking me, trying to dilute the standard, because they realized that in order to meet the standard, they wouldn't be able to make as much money. Nevertheless, after 2 years, in July of 1989, the entire membership of the National Nutritional Foods Association, which included every retailer, every wholesaler, every manufacturer, every educator, every broker in the health food industry in the entire United States, voted on the standard and passed it. And, you know, unfortunately, once this standard was passed, it took us a long time to get into something called the True Label Program. And in the meanwhile, they started more action to get a good manufacturing practices book, which was inspired by the passing of this probiotic labeling standard, and see if we can, you know, get Congress to support the passage of the Deshaies Amendment, which gave us the right to make structure function claims in 1995. And so, therefore, there was multiple industry efforts to make certain that these labeling standards had an effect on the industry and that we were going to self-regulate through a True Label Program. Now, the True Label Program was a very efficient and fair program in the dietary supplement industry, and every consumer should want to hear about this because you're shelling out good, hard-earned money. And these the True Label Program was there to protect you, to make sure that what you're buying actually contains what's stated on the label. And so most of the manufacturers joined the True Labeling Program, but unfortunately, not everyone wanted to join, because when the NNFA, at its own expense, tested every category of dietary supplement in the late 1980s, early 1990s, they found that 80% of the dietary supplements in the health food store did not contain inside the bottle what was stated on the label. And this mortified all of us. We had no idea it was so extensive. As a matter of fact, if you fast forward today, about 33% of the consumers don't trust the labels of the dietary supplement that is sold in the store. So I think we have some fences to mend here as an industry. And as a consequence, the True Label program was what caused the implosion of the National Nutritional Foods Association, because simply people did not want to have their product tested. They did not want to lose money because they wanted to compete in the marketplace by giving discounts, coupons, and meeting a price point. And we all knew it's not just in probiotics, but with bioflavonoids and other, you know, amino acids. I could go on and tell you every category that there was misrepresentation about what was actually contained inside the capsule of that dietary supplement product. And I feel the only way we're going to get this changed is if we get a grassroots movement by the consumer, like we did for organic foods, that prompted, you know, everybody to have a certification program to stop the misrepresentation with organic foods.
Do you feel that it's the industry's job to do this, or the consumer's job?
Well, I think at this point it is the industry's job to do it, but they're not going to do it. And if the government comes in, it's going to be very heavy-handed. I think the consumer has to push that there be some acquisition of some standard. And they really, the way to start getting movement is to not buy products who don't conform to the standard. Because if they keep you know, rewarding people who are not telling them the truth, how are we going to change? I think that we have tried now since 1987 to get the industry to self-regulate, and we have not been successful. And I think the only way to move forward, since the dietary supplement industry is now growing on the internet, and there's almost no policing going on in the internet, and everybody really who sells dietary supplements doesn't really manufacture them. They mostly use the same private label supplier. And so they're not really called to task by anybody because the consumer assumes that, A, they're telling you the truth, and, B, that the government is watching out for them. And unfortunately, neither is true.
Well, the other thing is, you know, I think today it's just hard enough for people to start even realizing that they want to get healthy. You know, and then once they decide to get healthy, obviously there is, you know, that idea that, you know, I'm just going to use something and, you know, I should get a dramatic difference. And, you know, we're adding another whole layer here of things that people have to think about, you know, so it gets difficult.
Well, of course it gets difficult, but mm-hmm. it's like, how would the consumer feel if they went into the store and the manufacturer that was selling them a diet product and misrepresented the amount of carbohydrates, proteins, and other ingredients listed in the product? I think the consumer would be pretty mad. And that's the same way it should be with dietary supplement. We, you know, food manufacturers have cleaned up their act most of the time. But you know, dietary supplement industry, it's like the Wild West. Really very little attention is paid to what's, listed on the side of the label and what's contained in the product. And here it is because, look, we're talking about 100 trillion microbes that are found in the GI tract. Now, if you've listened to our previous shows, you know that the ecology of that microbiota actually controls 99% of your genetic expression, that only 10% of your genetic expression controls what goes on in your body. So understanding this microbiota, and sometimes it's referred to as the microbiome, and that's what I call the sum of all the genetic material. And if people start tuning out because they don't like the terminology, but at least, you know, what I'm going to provide to them is a very simple guideline. It's only 7 points, and actually only 3 points that are mandatory for you to understand when you're assessing a dietary supplement product. And that is that the product, you know, I don't care if they tell you it's shelf stable, because A, there's no such thing as a shelf temperature in warehousing, transportation, and by being consumed by the ignorant consumer. Shelf stable implies that the product is stable at 70 or 72 degrees Fahrenheit. That temperature virtually does not exist in warehousing and transportation unless you have a walk-in refrigerator and unless the whole distribution channel takes care that this product is not exposed to heat. So that's number one. So, you know, now you've easily eliminated everything that's not refrigerated. Next thing is that, you know, the label has to tell you exactly what microorganism is in the label and what's the name of that organism in the proper listing, genus, species, and strain. And then it has to tell you, okay, there is, you know, 3 billion, 4 billion, 5 billion of this microorganism that I guarantee to you that you will ingest through a best before date or expiry date. And it's very simple. Even though you may not understand the name of the microorganism or you don't know what it's there for, it is the manufacturer's responsibility to tell you exactly how much of each microorganism is in there. And you as the consumer should want to know you are ingesting a living entity that's smart. And if you're just trusting that the manufacturer is doing their due diligence, I would encourage everybody to think about it again, because most manufacturers don't make their own probiotics. And in fact, I don't know of anybody besides Natron that makes their own probiotics. So therefore, you're not even talking to the base manufacturer. You're talking to a person or an entity that's getting this product made for them by someone else and marketing the product to you, the consumer. Since you, the consumer, are ingesting a living microbe, you should at least expect the minimum to make sure that the product is handled appropriately in distribution and that what's listed on the label is actually inside the product through an expiry date, and that those microorganisms survive all of that, including stomach acid and bile. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money and you're just selling yourself a good idea.
Well, in that same realm, a lot of us today we're talking a lot about these functional foods. Because we're seeing them, and we're seeing the word probiotic, you know, that you have truly brought to the public out there. But we're seeing foods that are, they use the probiotic in the label. So we automatically feel if this is a functional food that this is going to be good for us. I mean, what kind of care do we have to take into that area with food?
Well, an abundance of care. You know, it's again, the marketing machine playing to our weaknesses. You know, I use the term really accurately. You don't want to think you're getting adequate amount of beneficial probiotic bacteria in what I call a probiotic junk food. What is a probiotic junk food? Probiotic junk food is either a yogurt, a kefir, any kind of fermented food that has a lot of carbohydrates and sweeteners that you're getting along with your dose of probiotic. And that's a no-no because it's only not only a no-no because it's bad for you, the individual, it's bad because whatever probiotic content you're getting in that product, and it's never, ever guaranteed the amount of probiotic bacteria that you're getting in that product. And if it is guaranteed, nobody's checking on it, and I have my suspicion that it's probably not there after 2 weeks of shelf life. But you are getting ample amounts of carbohydrates and sugar, which we know for a fact will stimulate undesirable bacteria to grow in your gut, and especially yeast. And what I don't understand is that since the 1980s, since the publication of Orrin Truss's book and Dr. Crook's book on the yeast connection and talking about how yeast is a problem in all of our diets and people were avoiding sugars and carbohydrates, and all of a sudden now we're drinking kombucha, which is a fermented mushroom drink, and we're consuming a lot of sugar with our probiotics. And frankly, I just don't get it. I don't understand the inconsistency and the swinging effect that people just buy whatever anybody's hyping or the latest thing, or they're buying berry juices because the berry juices are very healthy for them. But in the same sense, they're ingesting a great deal amount of carbohydrates and sugars, which will stimulate the growth of this very bacteria that they're trying to eliminate by taking a strong and good probiotic to, minimize the growth of that undesirable bacteria in their gut. So it's counterproductive. My bottom line is that taking functional foods that claim to have probiotics and they have large amounts of carbohydrates and sugar, and they don't tell you exactly what organism you're getting and at what amount, you're really wasting your money. And the only thing I can see is a good functional food is a plain kefir or a plain yogurt that you want to add your own dry roasted almonds that you do at home and with honey. And that way, I would say fine. Then you have a pretty good functional food. Anything else than that, I think you're just deluding yourself.
See, I find myself using plain yogurt and then adding my own walnuts and sometimes berries, but I know what's in it. And it just seems like what ends up happening to people today is we are tempted by the principle of eating these functional foods, but they end up, by the time they get to the store, they're like eating candy bars, really, because of the amount of sugar. And I mean, I've been saying that for a long time, that these sweetened foods are more like coming from the candy section rather than from the fermented section.
Yeah, and it's really, we're behaving like adolescents because we're giving ourselves permission to have a dessert just because it says it contains a probiotic. And, I think we all have to, be adults because the number of books that are coming out, the new one just by Emron Mayer, the psychological connection to what's going on in our gut, the connection made by Dr. Perlmutter and Dr. Hyman about the health of our brain and our GI tract, all connected to this microorganisms that are in our gut. There is so much information coming out on a daily basis that I think that a consumer who wants to spend their money wisely, because we all work hard for our money, and if we're spending $4 or $5 on designer coffee, for God's sake, and we know more about the coffee blend than we know about, the probiotic we're consuming, to me it's a tragedy. because we should know most about the probiotic we're ingesting, and then, you know, about our coffee and our mechanical devices.
So part of these standards that you are so passionate about, obviously one was the breakdown of the individual bacteria that's in, the quantity that's in there, and refrigeration. Those are the two.
Yeah, then the marketing company or the so-called manufacturer has to give you non-confusing, direct information in how to choose this product. In other words, if you want to just take it to 3 points, forget products that are claiming shelf stability, because that's very hard to regulate, and you're just, you know, playing Russian roulette with trying to think that you're going to get what you're supposed to get. Second of all, you have to have the right microorganisms in the mix, and the manufacturer has to tell you how much of each manufacturer and what the heck that organism is supposed to do for you. And then number three, this would give you very plain directions that this product needs to be thermally controlled. And, you know, what is the exposure of the heat and how much this exposure will damage the cell count in the product. That's it. That's very simple. And this is, if you look at, you know, 10 labels, it's going to be all over the board regarding these three different points that I just made for you now.
Okay. We talked a lot today about the idea that having a more of a standard is even becoming more important. Natasha talked about labeling standards. She's been talking about, you know, the proper labeling and having the right products in your product. And I think you'll enjoy coming back and listening to this well again. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke, and this is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this show and to download the on-demand podcast segments, visit the show page at radiomd.com. I thank you for tuning in. Be well.